Welcome to the Plugged In Podcast by Sweetwater. I'm your host, Mitch Gallagher. Thanks so much for joining us today. For this installment of Sweetwater's Plugged In Podcast, we'll be sitting down with Sheldon Dingwall. Sheldon is the founder and namesake of Dingwall Guitars, which was founded in 1987 in Saskatoon, Saskatchewan, in Canada. Dingwall makes incredible basses, both production models as well as total ground-up custom creations, and all of them look and sound just simply stunning. They combine unique proprietary pickups, multi-scale designs, and many innovations to create basses that are both functional and artistic statements. Now, while many players think of Dingwall basses as ideal for metal, and they certainly are, they can be found in the hands of a diverse range of artists from studio great Lee Sklar to Duran Duran's John Taylor. We're super excited to have Dingwall Guitars joining the Sweetwater family, and we've got a lot to talk about with Sheldon. Once again, thank you for joining us for this episode of the Plugged In Podcast by Sweetwater. Settle in, and let's get started. Sheldon, thanks so much for sitting down with us today. It's great to see you.
It's totally my pleasure. Thanks, Mitch.
We just crossed paths, a week ago at the NAMM show out in Anaheim.
Yeah, it was a great show this year.
It was, yeah. It felt like it was back.
The excitement was there. It's counter to how the news is representing the economy. There's enthusiasm like I haven't seen in 5 years.
Yeah, fantastic. So Dingwall Guitars, man, mid-80s-ish, Saskatoon. How did Saskatoon become the hub of a bass brand, if you will?
Well, that's a really good question. I don't know if you knew, but Saskatoon is the birthplace of the Canadian electric guitar.
Oh, how about that?
1962, my mentor, Glenn McDougall, started the very first electric guitar manufacturing company. He never grew it. That wasn't his goal, to grow it into a larger operation, but he was a tool and die genius. And so I learned a lot of my manufacturing processes from him, and how to think like a manufacturer.
Right.
And then if you think of it, there are so many things that you don't try because you don't think you can do it, or the barrier is too hard, too great to get into it. And so having Glenn, knowing that he was able to manufacture electric guitars on a small scale, on his property, I didn't have to get past that. I realized you didn't have to be Fender, Gibson, Martin, or Taylor to be able to do something like that. So,
right.
Yeah, the first step was already taken.
Yeah. So how did you decide to focus solely on basses? And how did you get started?
You know, people are surprised that we're Dingwall Guitars, yet we build bass guitars.
Right.
They're also surprised I don't play bass.
Really?
You know, a lot of artists, they start out wanting to express themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And so I did the very same thing. So the very first guitars I designed were the perfect expression of what one guy wanted. And unfortunately, I was that guy, and I couldn't buy every guitar we built. and that's a hard thing to get past. And with basses, I had no choice but to listen to the customer, because I didn't know intuitively what they wanted.
Right.
And so then I started to develop basses that were based on what they wanted, not on what I wanted.
Right.
And it made all the difference.
Yeah. Well, since then, the company has become such an influence in the industry and with artists, and you've embraced innovations and come up with so many innovations of your own. Talk a little bit about that. What drives you to want to be on the cutting edge of bass design?
To me, that's where the juice is. Maybe it's ADD. Maybe it's just an independent streak. But the more that we can develop something that is our own, that serves a purpose, and I'm as guilty as anybody of innovating just for the sake of innovating, and right. Really it's just basically me trying to satisfy that need. But more and more as we mature, really trying to focus on an innovation is only something that we show others if we believe that it has a purpose for the musician. It
sure
improves their life.
Right. Yeah, it has to be practical.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It has to be musically inspiring. And has to contribute to the effectiveness of the instrument.
Yeah. And, you know, a life in the arts is, you're not paid well in terms of paper currency, but there's a second currency that I think is more important to artists. And it doesn't feed your stomach, but it feeds your soul.
Right.
And so to be able to innovate and come up with a unique solution, man, that just fills me up, and I feel great for like weeks on end.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Well, let's talk a little bit about some of those things. Of course, a prominent feature of all your basses is the multi-scale length.
Yes.
And the fan frets.
Yes.
Talk a little bit about that. What does that do for your basses, and why do you see it as important?
Well, didn't know it at the time. But multi-scale has been around since 3000 BC.
Okay.
It's always been used in harps and pianos.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not a new idea or technology, but in terms of electric guitars, which came from the monoscale violin family and lutes, it was a new thing. And there was a guy in California, Ralph Novak, and in the late 80s, he was just trying to solve the problem everybody else was trying to solve, which was, how do I blend a Strat and a Les Paul and get the best of both? And Les Pauls have just fat, beautiful sounding trebles, and Strats have the nice, clear wound strings. And if you stick a humbucker in a Les Paul, it sounds like a Les Paul with a humbucker.
Right.
Strat with a humbucker. Sure, right. Yeah, I got that backwards. Put a single coil in a Les Paul, sounds like a Les Paul with a single coil.
Mm-hmm.
Ralph was the one who figured out that it's the scale length that makes the difference.
Hmm.
And so he created the first electric guitar multi-scale, and a fan fret, as he calls them, it just worked. Parallel to that, I was struggling with how to, I'd been around pianos my entire life, how to get that low B on a piano onto a bass guitar.
Right.
And so I talked to the people at Baldwin, and they'd done a lot of research into scale length and string design and how the two interplay with each other. And so I learned a lot from them, and it pointed me in the direction of extending the scale. And tried 35, 36, 36 and a half. But when I got to 37, everything just fell into place. And it was like, there to me, in my mind, there was no other scale length that could get a B to sound as focused as that.
Right.
And then the problem was, is that nobody wants a 37-inch scale bass.
Right.
And so when I became aware of Ralph and his fan fret system, it was like, oh, well, you don't need 37 on every single string. You only need it on the B, and everything else can be shorter.
Right.
And so from that point on, once I heard the first prototype, I was all in before the first prototype. I could just see that this was the way to solve the problem.
Mm-hmm.
And after I heard it, there was no going back.
Right.
And we've had lots of opportunity to build parallel fret instruments, and it might have saved the company, or it might have put us further ahead. Once you know you can do something, it's hard to back down and give somebody something that you know is inferior. And I'm not saying parallel frets are inferior, but for us, they were.
Yeah. And it's a big part of getting that really solid low B, or even tune down to A,
yep,
that Dingwall basses are renowned for, that makes them so useful for types of music, genres of music, where you need that really low bottom end.
Yep, and guys will throw strings on them and take them down to F sharp,
wow.
23 hertz.
Wow.
A couple of guys are even taking them down to E0.
Huh.
I don't know how many hertz that is, but it's low.
That is low.
That brings in the natural question of, well, that's getting close to 20 hertz. Nobody can hear that. And they're right. But a typical bass tone is not just fundamental.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can get great fundamental with a rubber band on a box. It's the harmonics, the second, third especially, that's where you are able to determine pitch. And if you're a singer, that's where you're going to reference pitch from. With a shorter scale instrument, those harmonics start to get sharper and sharper. And so you're referencing pitch off of a sharp note. So by extending the scale with multi-scale, you can get those harmonics to be very, very close in tune, and it does so many awesome things. A, you sound more in tune.
Mm-hmm.
B, everything's more transparent and takes up less room in the mix. Even though it can be present, it doesn't sit on top of the other instruments.
Right.
Easier to fit in the mix. And any sound guy will tell you, you know, what are the hardest frequencies to control? It's the bass frequencies.
Mm-hmm.
And so having a tight bottom end, it doesn't sound big and boomy, which some people are disappointed by, but in terms of mixing, man, it just makes it such an easy job.
Right. Yeah, I would describe it as a very pure tone.
Yes.
Especially on those low notes, it just feels really solid, both string tension-wise, as well as just tonally. There's a real solidity to that. And like I said, I would just call it a very pure tone. And probably that stems from the harmonics being more in tune and the whole thing just reinforcing from the top down as
100%,
well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We tend to attract a really intellectual customer. And one guy in particular, he blew my mind. When he tunes his bass, he rolls off all the bass and cranks the treble and tunes that and then flips it and he checks the harmonics to the fundamental. And it blew my mind. A, that's such a cool concept, and B, I'm glad we were able to satisfy him because he's been a customer for 20 years and he's one of the guys that pushes us. Mm-hmm. You know, can you do better? Can you do better?
Right. Well, what I've seen though is that to that point, once someone plays a Dingwall bass, they're loyal. They tend to stay with you.
Super high percentage, 90% usually. They're not for everybody, but if you've had a chance to experience them live, typically that's when you're sold.
Mm-hmm.
And I noticed from motorcycle training, if you focus on the object instead of the path, you're going to run into the object. And so it's helpful for people that are just trying to get used to a Dingwall bass or a multi-scale, any guitar or bass. Don't focus on the obstacles. Focus on the path forward that you want to achieve, and you'll have a much better experience.
Nice. Nice. I love that philosophy. That's great. That's great. So there's a couple other things that really jumped out at me when I was checking out the Dingwall basses. Fairly common to take sort of a Les Paul approach where you have a mahogany back and you put a maple cap on top of that.
Yeah.
But you're approaching using multiple woods in a very different way with some of your basses.
Yeah. It started out as a joke. A friend of mine and I were just, you know, nerding out about alder and ash. And I thought it wouldn't be funny to do half and half. And we both laughed. And then I thought, well, wait a minute. It actually might be cool.
Right.
And so at that time, swamp ash was hard to come by in Saskatoon. And so we're using northern ash and it was really heavy.
Mm-hmm.
And that was one thing that I wanted to avoid. I wanted to avoid a really heavy instrument. And so I thought, well, why don't we try alder? And built a body, half alder, half northern ash. And the weight was nice. The B string was incredibly strong, and yet the treble strings had the warmth of alder. You wouldn't think so because you have aluminum saddles bolted to a plate, bolted to the body. How could you possibly hear the difference in woods? But every time you pick up a Lee Sklar model, which is what that turned into, mm-hmm. It's like, there's no question. Even amongst our basses, the Lee Sklar, it's the king of the bees.
Yeah. Yeah, fantastic. Another thing that caught my eyes on some of the basses, the Prima Artist in particular, you actually have multiple angles on the headstock. It's not just a single angle layback on the headstock.
Yeah, I call it a compound angle, even though that's technically not true. But it is compound in the fact that it's tilted in this direction and tilted in that direction.
Mm-hmm. So it's kind of rotated a little bit.
Yes, and that was just to get the nut to line up with the angle of the headstock. It makes it brutally difficult to manufacture.
I can't imagine.
But, you know, I didn't know anything at the time, and just figured out a way to do it with no math required, which is pretty much how I have to operate, and a simple setup. And then once we got into CNC technology, we kind of added something to those headstocks because every one of those headstocks has a veneer on it.
Mm-hmm.
And most veneers that look great on the top are quite soft. And now you're going to crank a nut and try and tighten your tuner, or you'll tune it just enough, tighten just enough, and then send it to Japan, let's say, and humidity swells it up.
Mm.
And it tightens the tuners automatically because the wood is swelling.
Right.
And then it crushes that soft veneer. So now what we do is we CNC machine the face of the headstock, leaving these cylinders protruding that the tuners rest on, and then drop the top plate on top of that. You never see it.
Yeah.
But you're always tightening against nice, solid, either maple or wenge or whatever.
Right, right. And speaking of the tuners, you worked with Hipshot to design a very low profile.
yes.
tuner that works with that concept of insetting the nut on the tuner.
Yeah. Hipshot has been a wonderful partner. We've been working with them since, I think, 2000. Just a great American company. They are wonderful to deal with. They're a large company, but they still have the personal touch. Mm-hmm. And so we worked with them when it was time to do our very first afterburner, which was our first entry-level bass, which, you know, they're not cheap anymore, but the first ones retailed at $1,200 in 2000 and didn't want to put a string tree on. So worked with Hipshot to design shorter tuners, countersunk into the headstock, they pull the strings down so you can have a flat headstock with no string tree.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. You also have come up with a unique pickup design as well that allows you to further tune the different strings and make the tone the way you want it.
Yeah. That was another thing that, I mean, we started with Bartolini pickups and they were just wonderful to deal with. Bill and Pat were, they were like mom and pop kind of to almost the entire small bass building community. Mm-hmm. They really shepherded us. And it came time for us to start taking control over our pickups, and Glenn McDougall again came to our rescue and helped us tool up and design the first pickups. And so we called them the FD series. Mm-hmm. Fury Dingwall. Fury was Glenn's company. So they were the first bass pickups with neodymium magnets. I noticed with El Nico, when I first started experimenting with El Nico pickups on bass, man, if you dug in too much, because I had terrible technique, you'd drain all the, temporarily, all the energy out of the magnet, and you'd get this really rough sounding distortion, like not cool distortion, but blow your speakers distortion. Mm. And the neodymium, there seems to be no upper limit. You can hit the strings as hard as you want. And because of the multi-scale, we've attracted a lot of players that really like to attack.
Right.
And the FD3 pickups, you can throw anything you want at them attack-wise, and they'll just take it and beg for more.
Right, right. Those are passive pickups, but your basses are available with both passive and active electronics. So you have preamps that you offer with those.
Yeah, so it's interesting. By putting a lot of work into the strings, developing the strings for multi-scale and the multi-scale system and the woods, we're kind of mechanically EQing the instrument so that all the strings have a similar tone and a similar tension. And, you know, when you think about it, once the pickup senses the strings, it sums them into a mono signal. Mm-hmm. So at that point, it's too late to fix anything. And so we're mechanical guys, and we figured out a mechanical way to EQ the strings so that the source tone doesn't require any post EQ. And so we sell really expensive basses with really fantastic preamps. And a lot of those customers just never turn them on because I like the passive tone.
Right.
That's all I need.
Right. Yeah. Oh, that's fantastic. That's fantastic. I was interested to see with the, it's funny, ended up using the same word, but looking at the bases that are the production models that you bring in, you call it a hybrid approach to doing that. And
yes.
Which is funny because I had said the same thing when someone asked me about them. And that is that they're manufactured, but then they come into your shop. And you do a complete setup and fret level and really take them to the next level.
Probably came from either being a guitar player who just, I loved low action. And so our basses, because we do the fret leveling in-house and the design of the neck, the design of the truss rod, allows for a bass with a guitar-like action, like exactly the same specs as I would put on a Strat. Hmm. It's an expensive way to do it, but, you know, we don't make average basses for average players. We make pro quality basses. You don't have to be a pro to play one of our basses, but if you are, John Taylor took one of our ready to play basses and used it for the Queen's Silver Jubilee. So 11 million people, and he's playing one of our ready to play basses.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Speaking of John Taylor, I think sometimes we have the impression that Dingwall is a metal or a prog metal bass, you know, real technical kind of thing, but you've got Lee Sklar, you've got John Taylor that you mentioned there. You've got a wide range of players in a lot of genres that are playing your instruments.
we kind of exploded in the into the metal world, thanks Nolly, and that was a rocket ride. They found us. We didn't go after that market. Didn't really know that much about it. As it turns out, metal guys are sweethearts. Like they're wonderful. You know, they look scary and tattooed up and tough. And then you talk to them and they're just like the nicest people and happy and well adjusted. And so it's been super cool.
Cause they're getting all that aggression out on stage.
I think so. Yeah. So it's been a really, really wonderful experience. But yeah, we've always been a generalist base. And by that, I mean just as effective in jazz or country or R&B or gospel, you name it. And any genre you could use a traditional electric bass in, ours will work because we fell out of that tree. We just sort of put a polish and refinement onto what are traditional tones that popular music has grown up around.
Right. Well, you've really taken them to the state of the art as far as the innovations and the technologies that you've put into the basses to, as you said, mechanically equalize them and to make them play great and then still offer the options of active electronics if you want to and all those kind of things. So it really is ultra flexible. Any of the basses are just ultra flexible.
Yeah. Well, thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. And I just have to say, they are gorgeous. Everyone's been coming in the studio and just oohing and aahing over these basses, man. They are incredible. Source the wood yourself, or how do you find the incredible woods that you use in these bases?
Oh boy, that's everybody's problem.
Yeah.
And so over 30 years, you know, we developed really close working relationships with wood suppliers. And I don't personally shop for the wood now, but I've passed all the contacts down to my guys and they've added their own flavor. And we will deal with guys that actually walk through the forest and look for trees that have fallen down.
Wow.
And there used to be, I haven't heard rumors of it since, but there used to be like a poaching problem with quilt maple trees. So we don't deal with guys like that. We deal with guys that actually have licenses to go through the forest and find the trees that have been knocked down. And recently bought some redwood that was hit by lightning in the 1880s, fell into a river and stayed there until 1962.
Wow.
It got pulled out, cut up, and then stored in some guy's garage until about 2 years ago.
Wow. Wow.
What a story that wood has.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So will we see that showing up in custom instruments then? Or yes. How do you use a wood like that when you find it?
Well, there's two options. And one would be that we just put it up on our website we have, let's say, a new top Tuesday and let everybody see the new selections. Or we might hold it back and just let the whole team give me your best idea.
Right.
And then they all contribute and we come up with something where the whole team is like, it's the hive mind of what our team can do. Because they're all artists, they're all musicians, they're all really tuned into what we do. And as you can see from the finishes, these guys know what they're doing. They've got some skills.
Yeah, oh, they're gorgeous. Absolutely stunning. Man, congratulations. There are just amazing instruments, and we're so excited to have you join us here at Sweetwater.
Wow, it's
just
fantastic
to be able to offer the Dingwall basses to our customers.
Well, I hope it's a great experience for you and for your customers and for their customers, the listeners.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I don't know. I'm not even really a bass player. I'm a guitar player like you, but I want one.
I can hook you up.
You think you know somebody? Yeah. I was looking at the Afterburner too. With the semi-hollow design, that really caught my eye. What a gorgeous bass, and that extra resonance that has is so cool.
That was a tough one. That took 5 years, I think, of on and off again, building a sample, realizing, not as smart as I thought I was, start again.
Man, that's fantastic. They're so cool. And again, congratulations on all your success, and welcome to Sweetwater.
Thank you, Mitch. Thank you so much.
You bet. I hope that you enjoyed this installment of the Plugged In Podcast by Sweetwater. Special thanks to Sheldon Dingwall from Dingwall Guitars. We're honored and excited to have the full line of Dingwall basses available here at Sweetwater. You definitely got to check out these instruments. Just head over to sweetwater.com, or better yet, contact your Sweetwater sales engineer to get full information on the incredible Dingwall basses. They're truly next-level instruments. Thanks again for joining us today. I'm Mitch Gallagher, and this has been the Plugged In Podcast by Sweetwater.